Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. In this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we are doing things a little differently. My guest today, Rob Allen, as many of you will recognize, has been doing a public challenge with us throughout the month of March over on the blog. And that challenge was to go from zero to earning $5,000 in just 1 month, 30 days, as a brand new freelance writer. Now, while Rob has held various in-house jobs in the past doing writing and content work for brands like Ramit Sethi's I Will Teach You Be Rich and Agora Publishing, this is his first true foray into attempting to become a freelance writer. And the goal of his challenge was to do that without leveraging his existing contacts or previous project-based customers. Thus, he is starting from as close to scratch as possible and while still working a full-time job. So, last month, Rob was working feverishly to build this new freelance writing business on the side during his early mornings before heading into work and over the weekends while traveling also. Now, I don't want to spoil anything for you, but if you've been following along with the challenge, you know that part of Rob's promise was that as long as he earned more than $1,000, he'd be giving that away to one of you. He did surpass that goal, so one of you will be winning $1,000, and I want you to stay tuned because at the end of the episode, we've got instructions on how you can go about entering the free drawing to win $1,000 to put towards growing your own side business. And if you don't want to forget, if you want to get started right now, you can go and enter to win on the blog this moment. Head over to ryrob.com/freelancewriting. That's spelled ryrob.com/freelancewriting, all one word. But for now, let's talk with Rob about how he did with the challenge, both what worked and what didn't. So how'd the challenge go? Rob, did you hit your public goal of earning $5,000?
We did. We blew past the goal, ended up earning $9,000 in bookings, and about $3,500 of that has already hit my bank account. So we did hit the goal in the 30-day window, which I was incredibly excited about.
And I'm very impressed by the way. That's a really difficult number to hit, especially surpassing it by as much as you did. You basically went from zero to, you know, $9,000, you said, in just 30 days, essentially. So I want to drill into that. But before we start talking about the email templates and, you know, the sales conversations you had, which I think will be really interesting for everyone listening today, I want you to give a little bit more context around what this challenge was, kind of the rules you established for yourself, and, you know, what your goal was for it.
Yeah. So basically, you and I were talking about this and we were like, you know, God, how many people have these like freelance blogs where they're basically talking about how, oh, I went from zero to six figures doing this freelancing thing from scratch. And then like all these notes about just this super high level stuff. And we were just like, has anybody actually tried this stuff? Like, has anybody actually tried this advice to see if like literally someone could go from zero to like earning a pretty good income within just like a super short time window? And, you know, you and I were kind of batting around some ideas. And I think at first I was thinking like, oh, maybe I'll do 60 or 90 days. And then I was like, you know what? Screw it. Let's do 30 days. And let's see if I can make like a pretty, like a decent salary, like $5,000 a month, and just see if I, you know, take all of my existing connections and don't use those. If I literally just pretend like I am a newbie who's basically has some like level of like wanting to write and do wanting to like improve my skill as like a freelance writer, but has no connections, no experience, no industry, no website to link out to, no writing samples that you can reference, like literally just like reaching out to people cold and see like what would happen. And so, you know, you and I were kind of brainstorming, we put a gun to my head and we did it. So that was really cool. So that was basically the rules of the challenge. Was basically I could not lean into, you know, any of the things I've done in the past. Like, I wasn't going to like literally scrub the internet. So if someone could like find like something I'd written for Entrepreneur Magazine or something I did on Ramit's site, or if that came up kind of naturally in a conversation, I would not necessarily like be able to hide that because I didn't have the time to like remove those things, but I didn't lead with it in any of the like outbound messaging, like saying like, oh my gosh, I made so much money for Ramit's company, or did all this stuff for Dr. Axe, or whatever. So that was like the framework that we were working within. We kind of set up the rules for the challenge.
Yeah, I love this. This is kind of like the ultimate put your money where your mouth is kind of challenge. And I'm all about these because I think people can learn so much from not only the successes, but also the failures that you experience along the way, because we all will fuck up different areas within our businesses, especially when we're trying something new or something experimental, something with a time crunch. And I remember, you know, one thing that we were going back and forth on right before we started the challenge was the dollar amount, right? So we were, you had originally thrown out $5,000. I was like, hell yeah, that sounds awesome. That's like a meaningful level of income. A lot of people would feel comfortable sort of, you know, quitting their day job to jump full time into freelance writing if they were earning $5,000 a month. And you wanted to go down to $1,000 at one point, but as you said, keeping that gun up to your head, right? Metaphorically speaking, we got back to $5,000 because I think that's kind of just a meaningful number, right? And I think there's also a lot to be said about setting a goal that challenges you. How did you feel about that number in particular?
So I do want to go back to what you're talking about. And I totally remember when we were emailing about this, because there was a minute when I, like, when we had set the $5,000 number, that I kind of got like this, like almost like heart palpitation. Like my heart started to flutter a little bit because I got a little bit scared. And so I totally, I was like, hey, maybe we should actually make this 1,000. And so I just remember the feelings of thinking like, that is definitely a very aggressive goal. But then I'm actually happy we stuck with the $5,000 number, because it did honestly feel so out of reach. You know, it seemed like what you go on these Upworking site, like Upwork, these like freelancing sites like Upwork and even Solid Gigs in many ways. And you see like the number, it'll be like, they're hiring for a job, like for $10 an hour. And you're like, oh my gosh, I have to work. Like, what would that be, like 500 hours to get paid $5,000 this month? So like thinking about it that way was definitely one of the things that was a little scary, but it also, the thing that I loved about it was that it forced me to get super creative. And like, I think we'll talk about some of the ways that I like reach out to people, but like, I think thinking big in that way was honestly like, it was like a saving grace in the challenge that ended up being responsible for me blowing past the goal so much, because I wasn't thinking like, what's the thing I can do for $5? Like, I was going after the things that were like, what could be a potentially like a $10,000 client? And like, let me go after those people. So I think that having that big goal, like that was one of the, honestly, the saving graces that we ended up settling on for the challenge.
Awesome. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think having that bar set really high made you rise to the occasion too. And I could really tell that in the weekly updates as well. So Rob, I want to jump into the stuff that I know people are going to be asking about. First question I really have for you is, who were the clients and how did you land them? And, you know, we can go in succession. We can pick out what you think maybe the biggest deal, the most interesting deal was. But I'm curious to dig into sort of that process of client acquisition. Where did you find them? Did they find you? How did you convince them? Let's start with that.
Yeah, great question. So one of the... I would say that there was three main clients that I ended up getting. One of them was in the health space. It's a company called Perfect Keto, and they do a lot of things very similar to a role that I had fulfilled at back when I was like working with Dr. Axe. And so that actually came in as an inbound lead, like in a way that seems like almost like client jujitsu, how I ended up getting them as a client, because it wasn't something that I was like actively reaching out to. They actually were seeing if I like knew any like content writers or things like that. It was someone I had never met before. And the woman connected with me on LinkedIn, and she was like, hey, do you know any like content writers? And like, I don't write content. I do direct response copywriting. And so, I actually told her, you know, hey, there's absolutely no way I can specifically help you, but like I am connected to some writers in the space. And so I ended up sending her outbound and in like a really generous way, and like connecting her to someone who I think potentially they might end up hiring. And I think that she was kind of impressed by the amount of value that I gave her in that first exchange, that she kind of came back around with me and was like, hey, I told the CEO of this company, like what I actually, what you actually do. And we wanted to potentially work with you. And so like I ended up sending them for, I got on the phone with their CEO and I ended up sending him a pitch and a proposal, and it was amazing. So that was actually one of my first clients. So it was like one of the bigger ones that I got out of the gate. And so that was one of those moments where it was like, I stressed to everybody on our email, on your email list, and like in the update was like leading with value for people is so much more powerful than like trying to make the sale right away, because I probably could have finagled my way into like landing this as like a content writing role, because I can write content. But because like I sent that value out, I think that they like viewed me as like the expert on the thing. And I mean, I sent a very sizable proposal. I think it was a $3,500 project that I ended up getting. And that was just like right out of the gate. Like it was immediately an immediate win for me that like was so powerful. And then speaking of another client, was I think one that people probably would appreciate was the one that I just basically kind of took off of Facebook. I saw within this, it might have actually just been a public post on Facebook. I think maybe Brian Harris posted like his new goal template that he's like using for the week. And he was like, comment the number one thing that you're wanting to focus on this week. And like, I saw like, you know, maybe like seven lines down, like in the comment thread, that a huge entrepreneur, his name is actually Jeff Goins, had commented on the thread, and he said, I'm fixing my webinar. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is pure gold. Like a big guy like that, like needs webinar funnel help. Which that's something I have a ton of experience with. So I literally like went to his site, like grabbed like the contact form, and then like put a screenshot of like him saying, I need help with my webinar funnels. And was like, hey, I have like a lot of experience doing this. So I ended up like meeting with his project manager, sending out a proposal, and landing a pretty sizable client. Again, I think that was a $1,500 project that I ended up working on with them. And then the last category was the one I landed on retainer. And so this is actually something that I didn't really spend a lot of time on in necessarily the updates, but I was able to spin the original, that contract that I had with Perfect Keto into a monthly retainer project for about $4,000, not about exactly $4,000 a month, for some of the services that I was able to leverage by fulfilling on that first project that we talked about. So I ended up connecting with someone else on their team to kind of do that. But that was the gist, and that all ended up adding up to about $9,000. So that was the rundown of the clients that I landed. And we can go into more of the specifics on some of like the ones that kind of dropped off, because I had a lot more meetings than that, but and some that kind of were like egg on my face.
Well, it's really interesting to me that, you know, throughout this whole process of the month, a lot of pitching, right? Tons of pitching, a lot of emails that you sent out, Facebook messages, or a post rather, you replied to, LinkedIn messages. I think it's so interesting to see that, you know, the deals that you landed were essentially just a few really big ones. You weren't like piecing it together with, you know, $100 blog posts or something like that. Like you really stuck to your guns on the value that you know you'll provide to clients, and you went after people that you knew would appreciate that, right? Like that I think is a really important takeaway for everyone listening here today, is like, know the value that you can provide and don't really sacrifice on that.
You worded it perfectly. And the only thing I'd probably add to that is like, in the mode that I was in, and I honestly, like looking back at like a lot of the advice around freelancing, and I think this is where some of the people go wrong, is like, for me, the mindset is like, I have to be able to provide this amount of value to this client, because I have to be able to get this price, because any other price is not going to be worth it to me and my time, because it was so like restricted and limited, and it's also not going to be worth it to the client. So like I kind of went very aggressive, like above and beyond, like in a lot of ways, like I probably overpromised and over delivered on almost everything that I did. But that was one of the cases where that was the way I was viewing it, is like, I kind of thought big, and then I would be like, okay, how can I think even bigger? And then how can I think even bigger than that? And then like, I would, you know, kind of do a little bit of backwards math and like see kind of the value it potentially could add to the client. But then at the end of the day, it was like, it was honestly like those big contracts were, in the way I viewed it was, if I don't get this, like I just got to go get another one that's even bigger. Like I wasn't even going to like let my mind drop to that smaller level, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And one thing you mentioned too, is that you had a lot more conversations than just the deals that materialized. And that's definitely been my experience too in the world of freelancing, is that, you know, no matter how good you are at selling or how impressive your portfolio is, how great your work is, you're never going to land 100% of the deals that you even get to the, you know, phone conversation level with. So let's go to that portion of this challenge. You know, if you remember off the top of your head, how many people did you end up talking to that didn't convert into a deal?
Good question. I don't have the specific number on hand, but I know at least probably had at least 10 or 12 conversations with people that, like, I was actually like on a Skype call or a Zoom call like this. And, you know, either I end up sending a proposal afterwards that just things just didn't work out based on the price, or like literally during like the discovery call, like I would call it, we ended up finding out, you know, like, hey, this probably isn't a good fit. And so, yeah, I mean, there was definitely a good chunk of like, you know, almost, what is that? Like 85% of people said no. But in those cases, like, I think a lot of times, like, I didn't sink a lot of emotional interest in that. Like, I was focused on the key activities that I needed to do, which was, you know, I knew I needed to be reaching out to a certain number of people. I knew I needed to, like, make good on the clients I was landing. And I knew that, like, if I did the prep work in advance for the calls, like, the ones that actually would be, end up being, like, great clients for me would end up working out. I know, like, one of the calls I ended up having was, like, with Solid Gigs. They were actually hiring their a direct response copywriter for a financial product, which is like, in terms of like the whole direct response industry, your audience might be curious about this, but this might be just more of an intellectual fascinating thing. Financial industry pays by leaps and bounds much, much more for direct response copywriting, part because of the skill set that's required for it, and then also part because of just like, it's very hard to actually write good copy in this industry, and like in a way that's actually like legal and a way that's like, you know, vetted and it's proven to convert and all these things. So that's kind of an aside. But when I saw it like come into my inbox as like an inbound lead from Solid Gigs, I was like, oh my gosh, this is an amazing opportunity. And I ended up having a call with this guy. And honestly, it was probably like one of the most perfect fits imaginable. But it literally completely overlapped with everything I was doing with Agora. So like mid-call, I was kind of like,
oh, no.
I literally was kind of like having to eat my own words, because he was like very amped up and like very excited about working with me. And I was trying not to like talk about the things I did with Agora, and because I didn't want to like leverage that and like close the business that way. But it became very apparent. And so it was very awkward to like back out of it and end up having to tell him like, you know, have a conflict of interest. And like, I think it just kind of took him from left field. Like, why are you like reaching out? And then like, you're asking all this information, and then like, you just kind of disappear on us in a way that was like, oh, I have a conflict of interest. I'm sorry. I can't work with you. I can send you referrals. So the guy was definitely like weirded out. And that was one of those cases where it was like, no matter how much work I did, it wasn't going to work out. I had several other conversations that just either the client's budget wasn't going to work out, or ended up determining like they didn't necessarily place the right amount of value on the skill set that I have. So I wasn't going to be able to back educate them into that. That's a roundabout way of saying there was a lot of failure along the way about reaching out to some of these people and just having conversations that totally bombed.
Well, it sounds like some were actually for a really good reason, especially the conflict of interest one, which, you know, for everyone listening, you know that Rob has a full-time job, right? That's the entire purpose of this challenge, is growing this freelance business on the side of his day job. So I think it's really interesting that, given, you know, having 12 conversations, 10 to 12 conversations, give a relatively small sample pool, you ran into a conflict of interest. And I think that's that's a really important takeaway for everyone listening to today is that, you know, as you start reaching out to people, you want to be very conscious of whether or not there's going to be a potential to cross over into, you know, writing about the same topics that you write about for your day job. And that's definitely, you know, gray area bordering on something that you definitely should not do. So I think it's so funny that you encountered that with such a small sample size. But, you know, we mentioned here that you're doing this all on the side of your day job. So I want to ask you something else that's really relevant to people in this same situation, trying to grow some sort of business, freelance writing, let's say, while they keep their full-time gigs. So how did you find the time to actually, you know, send all these outreach emails, hop on a call, and then, you know, start fulfilling the work that you're booking? What did your sort of routine look like? And, you know, tied to this question, what's your advice to someone else out there who's looking for more time or ways to better utilize their time?
That is a great question. So, like, I think you and I kind of talked about this even in the beginning stages of this was I put a tremendous amount of, like, front loading the work into my schedule because it was something that I was like hyper conscious of because with my full-time job, it is a very demanding job and I probably work, you know, 40 to 50 hours a week, sometimes maybe even more than that. And so I wanted to not only just like mark out the time, in advance, like going into the week and like into the day, but I wanted to like know, this is the 10 hours that I've set aside for the challenge and like nothing else can interrupt that time. And that was definitely really challenging because I mean, I like literally had to either force myself to get up like an hour earlier or, you know, I would stay like an hour later after work and I would just make the time every Sunday I was sitting down and I was like, okay, here's the 10 hours that I've allotted to this whole thing here. And I would like map it out on my schedule and just kind of protect that time. And at one point I was traveling during the challenge and honestly, that was one of the most challenging things to possibly kind of balance, like was this challenge with the travel. And it was because, you know, even if I planned for it, like things would change because it's like, I would get off work or, you know, people would want to go out to dinner and I'm like, oh, I have this weird challenge thing that I have to explain. And so like holding to my schedule was like just one of the things that like I had to do religiously. And the time that I was able to like most protect and have to myself was just doing it in the morning. I know a lot of people like put exercise in that way. And I'd done that some with my schedule in the past, but I'd never like seen the tremendous value of just doing it before everyone else gets up. So for me, like I was just getting up early and just spending a few hours in the morning doing that outreach and like working on some of the work. And even sometimes, like, I honestly find this stuff fun. So, like, honestly, I would kind of mark off, you know, a few hours on Saturday morning or on Sunday evening just to kind of, like, crank through some of this stuff. And just protecting that time was just super valuable for the whole experiment because I don't think there was one week that I ended up actually doing less than 10 hours of work. And it really added up. Like, over time, like, by the last week, I was mostly just fulfilling. I wasn't doing a ton of outreach, which was a really good spot to be in.
So I got to ask one thing, you know, one hack, let's call it, that I've grown to really love over the years with carving out time for my side projects is physically saving the space on my calendar and really respecting that space too, right? So I live and die by my calendar. I'm such a religious follower of it. So when I schedule time from, you know, call it 5:30 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. to go and, you know, write a blog post or do this other thing for a client, that is like really, call it holy time for me. Did you get to that extent where you were actually like physically scheduling blocks on your calendar?
Yes. And honestly, like, I'm glad you bring that up. There is like nothing that, I mean, tell me if you feel the same way, but like, there's like nothing that feels better than being able to check off something that's that big. Like imagine if you like were, you know, sending a couple emails in the morning and by noon that day, you have a $3,500 contract sitting in your inbox. Like it feels amazing. Like your coworkers are not doing that. I promise you. So it feels like so good to like be able to do that work super early in the morning and block off that time. So I mean, yes, I definitely got to the point where I was like holding myself 100% accountable to like those calendar blocks. But it just the morning time was such a powerful thing just to feel super productive before most people were doing anything during their day.
What did you feel like was your biggest challenge throughout this? Was it kind of just like juggling this all and keeping the momentum going, or was it something else?
So the probably the easiest thing was actually doing the work and like actually fulfilling on some of the projects. So when I flipped that, like the hardest part was the part in being able to like be able to actually do that. So probably the prep work of like, you know, it was pretty easy for me to identify companies that I thought I could help or like people that, you know, worked for companies that I thought I could add some value to. But the hard part was finding like the hole in their company or the hole in their business that like I wanted to pinpoint it, because a lot of times they weren't necessarily even like openly hiring. When I applied through Solid Gigs, like that's almost always the case. Like they're actually hiring for a specific thing. But in most of the cases for the clients that I landed, I actually had to like expose a hole in their business that I thought I could fulfill. And so finding that and like doing the prep work and like presenting it on the call, like that was a lot of work. And like doing that work was definitely 100% responsible for the ultimate, like, you know, blowing past the goal. But it was definitely freaking hard to like, you know, find those things and like, you know, opt into all their email funnels and, you know, take notes on their emails and like see like what they're doing, you know, get a good feel for some of the things that they're doing within, you know, their sales pages and things like that. And so just like, it was hard to put together the pitches, and then it was definitely really hard to like, you know, make sure the business was closed because, as you know, when you send a pitch, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you're getting the work right away. Like you have to follow up with people and, sometimes more than once. But then once you actually get to do the work, it's like so much fun. But yeah, that was definitely the hardest part. It's just finding where my skill sets could add the most value to the different companies.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. And for everyone listening, you know, if you're wondering how Rob is charging $1,500, you know, $3,500, $4,000 for his services, this is why. He just talked about how much time he invested in, you know, signing up for someone's email funnels, going through and like really figuring out where he can poke holes in their business and where he can position himself as an expert to help them plug those gaps. And that I think is really the core of what this is all about, is that you're not just this freelance writer who is, you know, banging out a couple hundred dollar blog posts for them. Like you're feeling a real business need, and that's the way that you're positioning yourself too.
100%. And like I actively was positioning against those things, because if the job was listed as like a flat description, I became a flat description. You know what I mean? Like if it was bullet points on a thing that someone could fulfill on, then that's what they were going to expect to pay, like the bullet point type work, like that type of level of work. And so when I could think outside the box and like get really creative with how we might do something else, like that was really where like there was no like benchmark. It's like, oh, $10 an hour. Like I never even charged hourly for any of these things. And it's because I actively positioned myself against those things. So you're 100% right. Like I was thinking consciously about not wanting to be lumped into those categories.
So Rob, we're coming close to the end now. I want to ask you to share a very open-ended question here for you. What would be your single best piece of advice that you'd want to impart to someone listening today who wants to get started with a freelance writing business?
For me, I would say, like, you know, we even had this in the challenge where, the skills become almost table stakes for a lot of things. I remember, like, you know, when I posted one of the first updates, some people were like, you know, hey, I don't think this is necessarily fair. You know, Rob has some experience doing these things, and I 100% agree with them. Investing in the skills and like making sure that those skills were already there was like table stakes. So, like, I can't underscore enough like how much, you know, actually having like a baseline of like investing in a little bit of your education and, you know, making sure that you actually have like a little bit of chops when it comes to actually being a writer. Like don't come, I do think, I don't want to discourage anyone from like, you know, getting started in freelance writing, like with no experience or anything like that. But I do think that you have to be ambitious and like actually like have the skills. So I'm just saying that that is almost like a table stakes conversation. Have the skill set. But then like once you get to where you are pretty skilled, like I would say that then one of the biggest things that probably the number one tip that I would say to people is like, do not be afraid to ask for exactly what your dream would be. So for me, in a lot of these cases, like I really love to design like email funnels. And in my dream world, like I like to have complete say over what goes in those email funnels, where they end up going, ultimately, what products we sell, what prices they sell at. And so I was just almost fearless when it came to asking for those things. And so, like I know a lot of freelancers sometimes are kind of thinking about things in terms of like, what's the specific job that like I can fulfill? And I think that that is because of the way we've been taught to like traditionally hunt for jobs. But like when you're a freelancer, you basically determine what the job is. So design that. And once you know that it's valuable for a client, like pitch that to as many people as you think it can help as possible. So, I mean, it sounds a little grandiose, almost like dream world utopia type thing. But like, look, I mean, we did it 3 times within like a 30-day window. And I think almost everyone can do that, because when you meet, like when you have a certain level of passion that you bring to a project with the skill set, like clients love that. And if you don't get them results, just offer them their money back. Like you really don't have much to lose. So that's probably would be my number one thing.
Damn. Well, Rob, this has been awesome. For everyone wondering where you can go to learn more about this challenge, catch up on updates that you might have missed, or, you know, enter the lottery that we're going to be having shortly here for winning $1,000. Go over to ryrob.com/freelancewriting, and we'll include that link in the show notes for this podcast episode as well. But Rob, I want to thank you again for being here and for putting in so much work, sharing so much knowledge, behind the scenes access. And I want to ask you also to tell everyone where they can go to learn more about you and all of the other things that you do.
Yes. Yeah, so, we put together like a really quick website, for this, this project that we were doing. It's freelancerob.com. I think it's linked up on your site as well, but I mean, the number one place is definitely, the link on your site where we kind of go over everything. And I do want to, I know we're kind of wrapping up here, but I do want to give a special shout out to some people, who basically did this challenge along with us. There was, I don't know whose names we want to call it specifically, but I want to say there were at least 10 of you guys. And I know, Amit was, he was like one of the number one followers of this challenge, who you guys were doing this challenge right along with me. So I want to say just like, thank you to your audience and your readers for, honestly pushing me to like up my game along the way. Cause I know that they're already starting to get some really impressive results as well. And so, that was a lot of fun. And I just want to give a shout out and thank you to all you guys for following along and, you know, just doing tremendous work and like putting in the work right alongside me, because that was a lot of fun.
Agreed. This was awesome. We're going to be doing something like this again soon. So stay tuned for much more. Rob, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
All right. That was awesome. Rob hustled his ass off, and so did many of you that tuned in and followed along with the challenge, executing on the tactics Rob was sharing in real time. Seriously, great work to everyone who participated. This was awesome to watch along with as it unfolded. And now let's talk about what everyone here is still listening for, the $1,000 giveaway. As promised, since Rob blew past his goal, we're now, right now, hosting a free giveaway over on the blog where you and anyone you know who's working on building their own business can win $1,000 to put towards your endeavors. This episode is airing today, April 18th, 2018, and the giveaway will be running for the next 7 days, ending at midnight on April 25th. When the giveaway ends, we'll be selecting a random winner who will receive $1,000 sent via PayPal from Rob. No strings attached whatsoever. Do with it as you please. But again, as we said, we would love to see you put this towards growing your business. Now, if you want to enter to win, head over to ryrob.com/freelancewriting. That's spelled ryrob.com/freelancewriting, all one word. You'll see the instructions for entering the giveaway right near the very top of the blog post. You'll have to enter your name, email address, and boom, that's it. You'll also be incentivized to share it with more people. So the more that you share the giveaway with your friends, your family, your coworkers, anyone that would want to win the $1,000 to put towards a business, the more entries you'll also get in the giveaway. So we encourage you highly to share this with everyone you know who's an aspiring entrepreneur. And again, seriously, thank you so much for tuning in to all of this challenge, and we're looking forward to keeping the fun going. If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.